And it gives me huge pleasure to welcome to the studio Dave McGregor, a man who I have come to know over the past couple of months, maybe the past couple of years. Time flies when you're having fun. But I enjoy your company, Dave, and I'm particularly glad to have you on the show this morning.
Thank you very much indeed. You know, I've become so part of Bolito and the KZN North Coast after spending, I'll give my age away, 60 years plus up in Gauteng. That I really feel at home, and what a lovely community, and you guys and everything you do. Lovely to be here.
Well, the feeling is mutual to have you here. Now, listen, you alluded to the fact that you spend most of your life up in Gauteng, where the action is. And like, going through your CV, it reads like a James Bond movie. I mean, you have done everything. You have promoted some of the biggest sporting events in the country, some of the biggest music events in the country. You've done golf, you've done motor racing, you've done sailing, you've done concerts, and all of that in a sort of marketing, admin, fundraising capacity.
Yep.
Let's talk about that a little bit. Going back to the early, you have a few years on the clock, and obviously a lot has changed in the 60 years that you have graced us with your extraordinary life. What are some of your earliest memories growing up?
So, you know, my earliest memories were, I grew up in Littleton, which is the new Centurion. And my report in Standard 7 said David's marks would be so much better if he didn't go via the netball fields during classes. And I got home with a report that said 50.1%, and I presented it to my dad, and I said, "Dad, you know, this is fantastic. My balance between my social life and my school life is perfect, because you get the same certificate for 50.1 to 79.9. It's only at 80 that you get the distinction." So I thought I'd waxed it and had this beautiful pass rate. I had the balance in my social life, but he was wise, way beyond his years. He said to me, "I think we should go and visit your grandfather in George." Little did I know that on the way to George, you go through the thriving metropolis of Potchefstroom. And before I wiped the sleep out of my eyes, I was in Potchboy's eye for the last 3 years of my school career. And with retrospect, that actually probably put me back on keel, because I don't think I would have matriculated. I was just having too much fun at school. And so that was the first thing that really made a big difference for me, matriculating out of Potchboy's eye. And then, you know, my life, it's a case of being in the right place at the right time. So I always had a passion for motor racing, but it's probably before your time, David, but we had a thing called coupons and petrol rationing. You weren't allowed to travel at more than 80 kilometers an hour. It was in those days when there was serious petrol rationing.
Well, that was the 70s.
Yeah.
It wasn't before my time.
So
good
what
heavens,
I did,
you flatter me.
So what I did is I worked out that if you became a marshal on the total rally that went to Mozambique in those days, you got petrol coupons. And so I volunteered to go and be a marshal and do these rally cars and administer them. And by doing that, I managed to get extra tokens, which gave me extra petrol. And when I went on rallying, the motorsport bug bit. And from there, it was just a case of being in the right place at the right time, a lot of luck. And then from motor racing into the yachting, into the golf events, concerts.
Before we leave the motor racing, did you actually drive, or were you more on the admin side?
So I was lucky to drive as well. So I did the Roof of Africa, did a couple of off-road events, and then it became very expensive. So I found that my niche was to be a navigator and to help the driver actually get to where he needed to be in the shortest possible time. So I had the pleasure of navigating for Hannes Grobler in the Nissan Skylines and the Nissan team in those days. We won the championship actually in 1998. And then I came out of retirement to navigate with Guguletu Zulu, the black driver who was such a phenomenon, really a lot of talent, who unfortunately lost his life on Kilimanjaro. But I've looked at it from both sides of the windscreen, and I think that's what made me an all-rounder. Because when you're sitting behind the windscreen looking at it from a competitor, and in later years you become an organizer, it means that you've got more empathy, you understand the challenge. You know, a lot of administrators don't know what people are going through, but being on both sides of the windscreen definitely helped me.
Well, absolutely, it must have. And moving into administration, and more importantly, I think, than administration, even fundraising,
yeah,
that must have been an extraordinary challenge, because we understand the value of getting a good corporate sponsor behind any event.
Yep.
It's good for the sponsor if the event is good. Yep. It's great for the event. But it is a challenge.
Yep.
What was your approach to raising sponsorship?
So I think my best deal that I did was for the Formula One when it returned in 1992 to South Africa after, you know, in 85 we were the pariahs of the world. The Formula One withdrew. We went to see Bernie Eccleston. He said, listen, I said, Bernie, we want our Formula One back. You've got to have Africa on your calendar. And he said, listen, you guys are the pariahs. You need to do something dramatic. Get Nelson Mandela out of jail or something. I mean, this is now before Nelson was released. He said, I'll bring the Formula One back if you do something like that. So the day that Nelson was released, I sent him a fax in those days to say, Mandela out, Formula One Grand Prix back in South Africa. And he honored it. He did. But the plan
you were the interface with Bernie Eccleston.
We brought it back. Yeah, no, we brought the Grand Prix.
You're being very
back.
Modest saying we brought it back. It looks like you brought it back.
There was a whole team of people, and you know.
But that's always your go-to. You are very, very generous with your praising and recognizing those around you. And I think that's part of your success.
Well, Nelson helped us because he came out, and then so Bernie did. But then I put together what we called the K plan. I was running Kyalami at the time. People were naysayers. I said, we'll never get the Grand Prix back. It's dead. It's not going to happen. So I put together a thing called the K-Plan, which is 3 years of how to raise the sponsorship. Year one, we brought the German touring cars to South Africa. I think that was in 1989, probably 89. 1990, we brought Formula One testing back so that they could come and test and get the word back to Bernie at how good Kyalami was. And then in 91, we bought back a sports car race with a whole lot of sports cars. And then that was our three-year plan. And the sponsors started with me on year one, got bigger on year two. Year three, they were really psyched up. And then in 1992, we had the Formula One back in South Africa, 92, 93. And that's how we built up. So like all things, if you're going to raise money, you need a track record. Excuse the pun.
Absolutely. and clearly you did that. But the Formula One then kind of went away.
Yeah, became. You know what happened is the Middle East, and Bernie told me the story. He said that what's happened is if you make money out of the Formula One Grand Prix, I'm not charging you enough. Said the fact that you South Africans are paying $6 million for it and getting private sponsorship is a big feather in your cap. But if you make money, I'm not charging enough. And then he said to us in after 93, he said, guys, I'm sorry to tell you, but the Middle East, and in those days, the Middle East wanted to buy big international motor sport event. They put the price up from $6 million to $40 million.
Wow.
It just took it out of our hands. I mean, from 94 onwards, it just, Bernie said, listen, sorry, guys, the price has gone up. And we just couldn't, I mean, it was just beyond... It was beyond our reach, and a pity, but...
It is a pity, but it seems as Formula One almost has lost its luster. I don't know. There was a fantastic series on television.
Yeah.
I'm sure you saw it.
Yeah,
and that kind of almost, in a sense, dramatized, almost like
a
soapy. You got to know the guys, the people. But the racing was kind of same old. It was not like the old days when there was all sorts of anything could happen and usually
did.
This is pretty much slot cars. It's
so
almost
I think what's
like watching
happened,
scale
David, is it did go through a big slump. But you must understand, 22 races a year you're putting on. So the Olympics come around once in 4 years. You can really pump and build it. When you're doing 22 races a year and you're having one team dominate, it does tend to become a bit like watching paint dry.
Yeah.
But subsequently, I think since Liberty have taken it over, they've really re-injected. And if you think of Kimi Antonelli, 19 years old, winning at Monaco, being super cool. These are the guys. I think what it has become is more than slot car racing, has become more like games, you know, the sim racing, where these guys from a young age sit behind their computers and race and get and learn how to balance power and energy and everything. And they just natural. So you get this youngster just setting the Formula One alight. So I think it's regained a lot. And thanks to those programs that were done, it's regained a lot of its eyeballs again, but younger viewers now. So I think it's getting back there. I mean, South Africa would like to have it back again. But it was the golden years. I mean, imagine going to dinner with Ayrton Senna, Nigel Mansell, Prost, Schumacher, and I had the privilege of doing that because they'd come testing. And they're different animals when they're not in the race. When they're doing testing, they're much more relaxed. And the conversations that I had with those legends was really an honor, and it humbles me when I think back to having had that opportunity.
Extraordinary. Motor racing, and you did pretty much the same thing for the world of a serious competitive yachting. And then the music thing fascinates
That's
me.
That's quite amazing, yeah.
Because you couldn't get more extreme, really. Oh, I mean, yeah, there are commonalities. It's entertainment. But you're dealing now with...
Yeah, we brought Roland Keating out, and we had Celine Dion come. So it was all on the back of Operation Hunger. I don't know if you remember that there was an organization that was raising money to feed children and
yes,
people
of course.
That were
who was the lady
below the bread line.
Inner someone?
Yeah, that's right. So she had Operation Hunger, and they came to Kyalami and they said, guys, we'd like to do something at Kyalami to raise money. We're really running out. So that's how I got introduced to the world of music, because then I thought, well, if we're going to – brought out to South Africa those two-seater Formula One cars so you could have a passenger behind the driver. And we actually had Nigel Mansell and Pika and a couple of guys come and drive, but you took a passenger behind you. And I thought, that's not going to be enough to draw the crowd. Why don't we do a concert? So we did a fundraising concert with Celine Dion to raise money for Operation Hunger, linked to the race at Kyalami. So Kyalami really gave me the platform to get involved in things that were beyond my capability, and I just took to them, loved it.
Well, we're talking a little bit of music now. You've given me a couple of music tracks that are your personal choice, and I respect them, and I'm delighted to intersperse our conversation with good music. Your choice, Dave. And here we go. We'll be back. I'm with my very special guest for this morning, Dave McGregor. Dave, what a story so far, and it just gets better and better and better. So with a phenomenal history and background to big events and doing the impossible almost, you turned your attention to a new challenge on the North Coast. And I think it's fair to say that Zimbali Lakes has exceeded all expectations.
Yep.
And you have been largely instrumental in putting that thing on the map. I know there's been a team and all have played a part, but you have been the driving force that certainly I've interfaced with and seen phenomenal action and adventure. It's not without its challenges, I'm sure. What were some of the major challenges that you encountered?
So I think, you know, I must say that I remember sitting here with Wayne Cranbeck with you years and years back and talking about Zimbali Lakes and the vision. And we said our philosophy is to under-promise and over-deliver. Let's not talk about things before they actually happen. So I think one of the biggest challenges was that people didn't believe that Zimbali Lakes would actually rise out of that sugarcane. They thought, well, there were a couple of false starts in the beginning. We were in a partnership with Tongaat Hulett. And that came with a whole lot of challenges because we listed on the Kuwait Stock Exchange and they actually said to us, listen, we can't carry on like this. We put the bulldozers on. Tonga doesn't pay. The bulldozers leave. So I think the biggest challenge we had was to overcome the perception that Zimbali Lakes was just a pipe dream. It wasn't going to happen. So Wayne actually said, guys, we're going to stop talking about what we're going to do. We're going to do it, and then we're going to talk about it. And I think that was the fundamental change when people saw things starting to happen, and since then it has just roller coastered. I mean, we've got a visionary of a CEO of Annaberger who works on the project directly and guides it. And if you think, I think one of the nicest things is we like a Lego set. We just keep adding extra pieces on to make it better. So when we started off with Zimbali Lakes, now we're adding hotels, the supercar facility that we can talk about, the country estate that's coming. It's just vibrant, and it's what the North Coast is about. You know, things happen, things grow. I always say to my buyers, you spit a pip out, you know, and it, excuse me, you spit a pip out and it grows. That's how fertile, and that's the North Coast, not only in the soil, but in the people and the opportunities as well.
And we're going to unpack the premise of what is Zimbali Lakes and what is going to be Zimbali Lakes in the future. And I'd like to start there, actually, strangely, because not too long ago, an artist's impression appeared in the media showing the Tongaat River mouth transformed into a mini Dubai.
Yep.
And instantly there was a, well, let's just say it was controversial.
It was a buzz.
there were those that were saying, this is April Fool come early. Yeah. Nonsense. You can't build into the sea on the North Coast. Have you seen what the sea does to structures, any kind of hard structure? And so people mostly, I included myself, thought maybe it was just a marketing exercise to stimulate interest in Zimbabwe.
No, there's a famous saying in South Africa, hulle weet nie wat ons weet. We have got dolosse. You know, South Africa invented the dolosse, those beautiful concrete structures that are dropped into the ocean in Quebec, the old Port Elizabeth. And, you know, when you put those into the ocean, you tame it. And I'll tell you all about it. It's very feasible, very practical. It can happen. And there's thinking behind it as well. Why let all the super yachts go from Madagascar, Seychelles, bypass the KZN North Coast and end up in Cape Town? We need to stop them along the way and introduce them to our lifestyle and what we've got.
Is that the thinking?
That's the plan.
So it's more than thinking.
It's already, we're engaging across the environmental. And then it'll also make the Zimbali, that beach in front of Zimbali coastal is actually very dangerous. You can't swim there. But if you put these dolosse in and you create a small craft harbor, you'll actually create a bit of a swimming beach as well. So it's got knock-on effects. The Tongaat River is a disaster. I think you can rate a river from A to H. It's rated as G at the moment, which is literally means it can't sustain life. And by bringing this whole development in, you're actually going to clean up the river. You're going to create such a...
Oh, so there's an environmental...
There's an environmental
positive
plus as well, yeah.
Because I've only heard the environmental negative. When you start dropping concrete plus into the sea, that's no good.
No, these are dolosse. You actually attract the whole sea life back in. You create almost like corals again. It's incredible when you dig down a bit. But, you know, people like to be controversial. So we just quietly, like we said in the beginning, we just quietly get on with the job and it should be there in the next sort of 10 years.
Now, you alluded to the fact that government even is supportive of this kind of initiative. Yeah. What is the plan there?
So the government said that the KZN coast needs to have small craft harbors. And I think they were initially thinking about places like probably Port Shepstone and Port Edward, but we've gone one step further and said, you don't need to come into an estuary. If you take the estuary and put it behind the small craft harbor and drop the dolosse in, you can create a magnificent facility. And remember, we also have the supercar facility under race, which means that you can give us your supercars. We curate them. It's a white glove service. They're parked in air-conditioned storage. They come up on a lift when you want your car. It's all been properly tweaked and on trickle charge. Now, you expand that business so that you can look after the super yacht. So everything has got a golden thread that runs through it, so that one business actually creates another business, creates another one. Imagine all the employment and the sort of things that are going to happen. It's a vision.
It's an extraordinary vision. Yeah. And a very exciting one. And I'm sure it also has its controversial aspects spark debate, but I look forward to that debate. It'll be an interesting one. You just alluded to the supercar facility.
Yeah.
What is that?
So we've got a building called Avanti. It's Avanti Residences. But with a bit of a twist and a tweak. So on the ground floor, we have a supercar showroom. There's a lot of people in Belita on the North Coast. I mean, you see it on weekends, supercars running around, but they can't always park all these cars at their home. So some have got four or five. What we do is we double stack them in a air-conditioned storage facility under the showroom. They are tweaked. The car's on trickle charge. We rotate the tires. Everything's done. The car is white glove service, looked after. And if you don't like the color, we put it in our detailing section at the back and we change it for you. You want a yellow Ferrari, we make it yellow.
How?
So, well, it's a wrap. A car gets wrapped. And these guys race from Joburg. They are world-class leaders in wrapping cars and looking after them, putting different exhaust systems on, changing the car to the owner's specifications. There's a whole business. There's a whole different world out there, David, that we're starting to scratch the surface on. So your car comes up on a lift out of the basement, parked on the showroom floor. You arrive, you get in, drive around for the weekend, bring it back. We clean it, polish it, put it back on trickle charge until you need it again. And then above that, you've got five floors of residences with penthouses, etc. So if a guy wants to come down, if he can't come for the whole year, maybe he comes for 2 or 3 months, he's got his place that he can call home. And then we curate events on the showroom floor too for, you know, cigar, whiskey type evenings, that sort of thing. It's a whole buzz. Love it.
Wow. Well, way beyond my pay grade, but I'm very glad to hear that it is a possibility and it's happening.
We're going into the ground already. In fact, if you drive past, you'll see a whole lot of machinery. We call it yellow metal on site. We're already putting the piling in for the building. So it's beyond a dream. It's happening. Already going in.
And then there is a section towards the sea on Zimbali Lakes Estate that you call Tatali. That is apparently another, well, this is another concept in estate living. Talk us through that.
So we're creating a whole new precinct down on the south of Belita at Zimbali Lakes, and it has its own shopping center, Zimbali Square, 20,000 square meters, anchored by big tenants with proper restaurants. There's an international hotel brand that we'll be announcing in the next week coming in. And that Tatali precinct is to create lifestyle and comfort for people living on the estate and in Belita. So I say, you know, when you go online and it says add to cart, we've got a new saying at Zimbali Lakes, add to golf cart. Because you can get in your golf cart, drive from your home down to Zimbali Square, pick up your woolies and have a drink, etc. Send a couple of emails, drop off your laundry, do a blood test, all in your golf cart and come back home again. So all those facilities are going to be on speed dial on site. And Tatali Precinct is the precinct where that happens, including a gated section called Tatali Views within a gated estate. So that's got exclusive access, and that's where Ernie Els is actually building a house for himself.
Oh,
he's bought. He's already briefing architects. So Ernie's big part of everything we're doing. We've got the Big Easy wine bar and grill in the clubhouse is open now. It's fine dining. We've got the Ernie Els Academy that's going to open. There's another big announcement coming for next year, which I'm not going to share now, but there's going to be an event on this coast that is going to be like everything we've done, next level.
Well, that's a great sort of point to pause right now. I'm fascinated and enthralled, but let me play another piece of music and we'll get into that conversation on the flip side.
Sing. Oh, and
And we're back on the Dave Charles Show. My very special guest, Dave McGregor from Zimbali Lakes. And what a pleasure it is talking about what's coming and what's already here. You alluded to the fact that the Big Easy opened the bar and grill.
Yep, yep.
And we were there. We were very grateful to be invited to the media launch. Very, very exciting. Extraordinary to think that Ernie Els, who is an international celebrity on the golfing circuit, but I think just generally because he is a force to be reckoned with, has shown so much confidence in what you guys are doing. And he has invested, it would appear, which is exciting because with Ernie comes there's a kind of circuit, I think, that follows him. And many of those people, no doubt, will be following the example and probably looking at him. Have you found that to be true?
You know, we came, so Ernie just loves the North Coast. He said that his wife, Liesl, actually said they used to come up here to Ballito on holiday as kids, and when it was still a five-day pony track, you know, it was really seen, you landed in on the South Coast and you went down there, and they used to come up here on holiday. So she said, Ernie, we need to have a place here on the North Coast. I really want to come and spend time here. They've got homes all over the world, so they'll spend probably 2 or 3 months here. But he loves it. We came here to Lifestyle, and he kind of thought that, look, he's 57 now. He's a World Golf Hall of Famer. So he's famous, and there were a young group of girls. I think they were probably doing a stalk party or something. And they actually came up to him and said, Ernie, he was so humbled by the fact that these young girls recognized him and wanted to have their photograph taken with him. So he was just sitting here in a restaurant and made to feel extra special. Without them, they actually came and asked permission. And he just said, so then I saw him on some of the golf days. When a child comes up to him and says, Ernie, will you sign my cap? He doesn't just sign. He goes down on his haunches and he talks to the child at face level. So, you know, he's called the Big Easy. And he's just got this amazing personality. You know, celebrities can be a little bit abrasive at times, but Ernie is engaging. And when he's there on a golf day, he's part of the big event that we're bringing. And I can tell you that this Ballito North Coast is going to go, like we are going to celebrate.
Wow.
Salivate is probably a better word.
You certainly paint a picture, and I can see why you've been so successful in raising the kind of sponsorship in the past, because you create the visuals that aren't there. It's a bit of smoke and mirrors.
Sales and marketing, and mirrors.
Well, you know, you can only do smoke and mirrors to a degree, and you've got to be able to deliver on it.
I agree.
And you've presented the most extraordinary vision. And I'm talking historically now, when there was this long strip of sugarcane between two highways next to a wastewater treatment plant and a dead river.
Yep.
And who would have thought in their wildest dreams that could become desirable property?
You know, and people are looking for holistic living now as well. You know, I find that I think the expectations have changed. People want to live well. They want to feel well, they want to engage, they want to be in like-minded communities, and they want to feel safe, but they also want everything on speed dial. So you don't want to be hassled with having to travel too far to do anything. And let's be honest, Ballito's got world-class schooling. We've got education here that's second to none. I've experienced through my wife the fantastic facilities at El Ballito Hospital. I mean, they saved her life from a wormslung bite a year ago. And so I've experienced it first. I'm not talking as if this is not secondhand. I've actually experienced this myself. And coming from Joburg, being at Zimbali Lake, seeing what's developed there and being part of the vision has just been, it's next level. And Ernie, his golden dust is sprinkled all over that property as well.
Dave, you have had a remarkable life and remarkable influence in what's happening here. You alluded to the fact that you're not a spring chicken, and yet you've got phenomenal energy. How long are you going to stay the course?
So I said to people that when I shoot my age, I'll start playing golf. Having this fantastic golf course, I haven't started playing yet. So I reckon, I said I'm going to set my clock on 94, which is another 20 years' time. And when I get to 94, I may up it a little bit. But what you see here is all original parts. I'm like a good old vintage car. I always tell people I was born in 1951, the year of the Rinderpest. So these are all original parts. I've been blessed with fantastic health.
What do you attribute your good health to?
I'm going to tell you a story. I don't know how much time we got, but we used to come down to Umtantwini on holiday. And I was about 12 years old. I went down to the lagoon to fish. And there was an Indian family. I came down to stay with my grand. She had a place there. So there was an Indian family picnicking on the side of the lagoon. And the river had created a bit of a wash. And their daughter of about 18 went in, couldn't swim, stepped off the bank into the wash and started drowning. I thought she was playing. She was going up and down. Eventually they came and they called me and they said, "We can't swim. We can't. Please come and save our daughter." Now I'm 12 years old. Run in there, grab her. She nearly pulled me under. By luck, I managed to get foothold, get her back onto the beach. We got all the water out. So I carried on fishing, and then I went home. 2 days later, about 30 people arrived at my grand's house. And she immediately, they said, "Does this 12-year-old boy look like this that fishes at the loo? Does he live here?" She called me and went, "What have you been up to? You're going to get a hiding." She thought I'd actually been up to mischief. They came and they actually gave me a blessing for saving their daughter's life. And they said, "May you have a long and good, healthy life." And, you know, it only struck me later when I got back to KZN, where I'd taken my health for granted, that I thought, I wonder if that blessing that family gave me all those years ago isn't what has been the fact that I don't have a house doctor, I don't go to the doctor, I've been very blessed with good health. And so that's why I can set my clock on 94. And maybe that's the reason. I've got no idea why. Because I eat chocolates, I have sugar, I have coffee, I do all the mortal sins. And thank God to date, still healthy.
Well, you're an extraordinary example of positivity an age of, let's face it, we can do with all of the positivity we can find. I'm delighted to have been able to engage with you in conversation around one of the most extraordinary projects on the North Coast, and that I think we've only just begun, as they say. I wish you continued good health and continued success with Simbali Lakes, and I look forward to continuing the conversation with my very special guest, Dave McGregor. Thanks for joining me, Dave.
It's been an honor and a privilege.
And we play out with another of your special ones. This is curiously quite appropriate. Time to say goodbye.
Ah, good.